Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Lance Meadow, John Schmelk with you, 201-939-4513. That's your telephone number, talking with you for the next 1 hour. Lance, good morning. How are you, sir?
I am doing well. How's everything with you?
Doing
I know
well.
This is a much bigger day than Giants football, so at some point we're going to have to break down the NBA draft.
Well, we'll be taking calls about the NBA draft lottery, where the Knicks are going to pick, who they should pick, all that and more. No, in all seriousness, we'll be taking your Giants calls. If you want to throw in that comment, I'm not going to argue with that.
Oh, you're not going to shy away from that, please. Yeah, you can put on that facade right now. Don't fool them.
But we will focus on Giants football off the top here. And obviously, we've gone through a couple different questions the last couple of days. I'm not sure how much you listened, but on Friday and Monday, Lance, Paul and I talked about what player is most critical to the Giants offense and defense this upcoming year. A lot of people on defense said Landon Collins. Both corners were in the mix, too. JPP and John Beeson were also popular choices on offense. Dottino had Reuben Randle as the guy that he thought was very critical. Weston Richburg was in the mix. A couple of people said Ereck Flowers. I don't like putting that type of pressure on rookies myself. Victor Cruz with the injury was a guy some people brought up. So it was a good variety of players here that we had in the mix. So what we're going to do today, it's something similar but a little bit different. And this is a point I made on Monday's show, and I think it's an important one. A lot of people look to the rookie class and free agents and new players for reasons why the Giants are going to be better in 2015 and get back to the playoffs, Lance. But to me, the guys that are really going to make the difference this year are the guys that have already been here, are used to the system, are young, and they're going to make jumps. So I'm talking about the second-year guys, the third-year guys, the fourth-year guys. Of those players in their second, third, or fourth years in 2015, which guy do you think will make the biggest jump? Again, not be the best player, but make the biggest jump in production and ability from last year to this year for the Giants in 2015. Your thoughts?
Well, I would probably throw out DeMondre Moore. I think he pretty much is at the top of the list, given there's going to be an opportunity for him to have more of an integral role perhaps within the system. I still believe Robert Ayers is going to start opposite JPP, but if you go based on what Spagnuolo has done when he was here the first time as defensive coordinator, he likes to rotate his defensive players, and I think DeMondre Moore should be a key component of that mixture. I would put him up there, and I'd also throw out who Paul mentioned, Reuben Randle. Now, Victor Cruz, he's going to come back, but there's still going to be opportunities for Randle as well as Odell Beckham. So those two players in particular would really jump out to me. And with respect to the second-year players, John, I'm going to throw out Devon Kennard. And The reason I throw him out there is you want continued progression from what the rookie class was able to showcase last year. And Kennard is another player that I think Spags can utilize in many different ways within this defensive system. So those are the three. Devon Kennard would be out of the second-year group, and then I would throw DeMondre Moore into the group that comes after the second year.
I think those are a lot of the popular names we're going to get on Twitter. Now, I'm going to throw out some others, and these are the guys that I'm focusing on. I'll give you one offense, one defense. What the heck? I'll mix it up. I'm probably going to split this into two different shows, but we'll do them all in one. We'll see what happens. On offense, I'm going to go with Weston Richburg. And I know it's hard to judge production for offensive linemen, but I thought he showed a lot of promise in year one. I realized he had that little problem in the middle of the year. They had to bench him and sit him down, then they put him back in. But I think a lot of that had to do with the fact he was playing out of position at guard. He's naturally a center. I think the expectation is for him to play center this year, where I think he's a lot more comfortable. I think offensive linemen, it takes a year a lot of the time for them to get used to the NFL and get used to the better competition, more size, playing across them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think moving to center, being in his second year, I think Weston Richburg will take the biggest jump from year one to year number two on offense. Now, you go to the defensive side of the ball. I've seen DeMondre Moore on the field enough where, to me, something dramatic has to happen. And maybe adding Steve Spagnuolo, who used him a little bit differently, maybe that's the dramatic thing that will happen that allow him to have that really big bump. I think Devon Kennard had a very good rookie year. I'm not sure his second year is going to be, again, a huge jump, because I think he's set the bar high already. He played so well his rookie year, he's going to have to be significantly better than that in order to be the guy that makes the biggest jump. So I'm going to push him aside a little bit, too. Somebody online brought up Jay Bromley. I think that's interesting.
That's a good one.
He gave the team virtually nothing as a rookie because they had so many guys at defensive tackle that played well. So he was stuck behind them in the depth chart.
Didn't get much playing time.
Exactly. Physically, he looks like an NFL player. He's a good athlete. He had 10 sacks, double-digit tackles for loss at Syracuse the year before he came out. He's a guy, I think, that can step in and have a very, very, very big impact his second year. So I think Bromley is a good pick, and I think Richburg is a good pick when you take a look at the guys that you think could have the biggest impact in their second, third, or fourth years. And I picked two guys that happen to be in their second year because I think a lot of the times, Lance, that's when you get the biggest jump. The rookie year is such a process of getting used to being a professional, being in a different place, playing against better competition. I feel like year two is the time when a lot of players break out. So I'm going to go with Bromley, and I'm going to go with Richburg.
Well, using your example, Jonathan Hankins is probably the best guy to showcase how he made that huge jump in year number two.
100% right. That's a perfect point.
It was his coming out party. Now, part of it also was because he got much more playing time, which is, if you're to utilize that argument with Jay Bromley, if Jay Bromley gets more playing time, of course, that should help register in a player making an impact and taking a jump. You know, you brought up an interesting point about Devon Kennard, how you're not picking him because you think he made enough of an impact in year number one and he got playing time. But I'm looking at this year, he could very well, John, be an every down linebacker. Therefore, he's going to get even more playing time.
And play in all 16 games. So that
correct.
Matter. Right.
He was hurt towards the latter part of the last season.
And early part of the hamstrings.
Correct. So, you know, it was almost like an in-between period where he had his coming out period of time. And then all of a sudden, outside of that, you didn't necessarily see as much consistency. I think playing time goes hand in hand with impact. It goes
absolutely.
Without saying.
Absolutely.
So Kennard could still make that jump. Especially when you look closely at his numbers from last season and the injuries that you noted that he dealt with, I would still keep him within the range. But Bromley is a very intriguing player to break down, given the fact that he wasn't out there much. And even with Kenrick Ellis being signed, once again, going back to the fact that Spags likes to rotate his players, Bromley should still find opportunities.
No question about it. Now, there are other guys we could talk about in the mix, too. One guy that I mentioned, the Tino picked for his biggest, most critical player on offense for the Giants, is Ruben Randall. He's heading into his fourth year. But again, as many times as people criticized Randall last year, statistically, he actually had a pretty good year.
Great finish, specifically.
So I'm not sure he's going to take as big of a jump as some people might think, especially with so many weapons on offense, a boss that gets spread around a lot. I'm not sure how many targets he's going to get.
Well, let me ask you this. What about continuity, consistency? Maybe that's better to phrase with respect to Randall. Not necessarily making a huge jump, but giving you that production consistently through 16 games.
Smoothing it out.
There we go.
Rather than having peaks and valleys, you smooth it out and he's more consistent week to week. I think that's a great way to put it. I think another interesting guy here, and I think this will depend again on playing time like you mentioned, and also the health of the other two running backs, how about Andre Williams? I thought Andre Williams made some good progress his last two or three games last year after starting the year pretty slow in terms of yards per carry and things like that. Can he build on that and become even better this year? I mean, Andre Williams, if he gets hot, he could be the primary ball carrier on first and second down based on how this offense rolls. So he's another guy you consider when you take a look at a guy that could blow up, and maybe he becomes a 1,000-yard rusher this year. It's possible.
I'm just wondering, with the arrival of Shane Vereen and Jennings getting back to full health, he's not going to get as many carries per game,
which
means there's limited carries to make that huge jump and that opportunity. But you're right. If he could show consistency, they're going to stick with the hot hand, as they've done in years past.
Another guy in offense, Larry Donnell. He's in 2 years in. He made a big jump last year. And again, I stay away from him because I don't think he's going to make a similar jump this year. I mean, a similar jump from last year to this year would be a 75-80 catch year. I don't think with Victor Cruz, with Randall, with Odell Beckham Jr., with Shane Vereen, there's enough balls to go around for him to make that big jump. And if you want to stick on the offensive line, how about Justin Pugh? Can he make a big jump in his third year? I think we saw some improvements in year number two. He had a bit of a bad stretch in the middle of the year as well by his own admission. Can he make that big jump as an offensive lineman? But if he moves positions,
I was just going to bring that
then
up.
How is that going to affect that progress?
That's the big question mark
surrounding
Justin
Pugh. And that's why I
went
with Richburg instead of Pugh.
That's better, because Richburg at least is going back to a position where he played in college.
Right.
Pugh may be going to a position where he doesn't have a great deal of experience.
Might be. We don't know if
we don't know,
happen,
of course.
There's
it's
a
speculation.
Good chance that might happen. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And one other player that I was going to throw out real quickly, going back to the defensive side, is Nat Burhe, speaking of opportunity.
That was the next thing I was about to say. So, and you could throw Cooper Taylor into that mix of safety, too. Both those guys.
Both of those players are going to have, you would think, more playing time, even with two young guys in the mix. And therefore, with more playing time, as we've touched on, should come bigger impact and a significant upgrade in terms of talent. And those two guys, I think you can't necessarily overlook. I would assume at least one of them would be in the running, given they at least provide some veteran experience, considering it's a very young nucleus at safety. in line for one of the starting jobs, perhaps opposite a guy like Landon Collins. So those two players in particular would be two names to certainly keep close tabs on.
And here are some deep sleepers, or guys I would consider deep sleepers in this. Marcus Harris. Soup Harris, the wide receiver. Deep sleeper. Jerome Cunningham, tight end. Deep sleeper. Can Adrian Robinson, in year number four, finally get things together? And maybe he can play a role at tight end. That's a deep sleeper.
How about Jayron Hosley as a deep sleeper?
I was about to bring him up, too.
That one, I would say. Absolutely. And given the fact that Tremaine McBride appears to be penciled in its slot, but a new system and a new positional coach, as I've brought up time and time again with Hosley, could open the door for him to perhaps make some noise this training camp. Watch out for that.
I mean, Ryan Nassib heading into year number three, you're probably not going to see him on the field much. Maybe in the preseason he'll make a big jump. People get excited about Corey Washington? Want to throw him into the mix as a deep sleeper? I wouldn't, but you can. Mike Harris, I think, technically is heading into his fourth year. Maybe he's a guy with more playing time, can be that slot corner or even play outside for the Giants in the secondary. So, again, I think, and this is the reason I think the Giants could make a jump back up this year and make it into the postseason. They need these young veterans, all the guys we just talked about, to continue to ascend. We don't want stagnation. We certainly don't want decline. We need continued ascension from these players. If the Giants get it, they'll be in really good shape to make a run at the NFC East this year.
Well, we just listed half the roster, it seems. So clearly there's a young nucleus within this 53, or within this 90, I should say, now that rosters have expanded. And if the progression continues, John, you know, this is how you go about building your team. You build your team with the pieces that you brought in through the draft that do not stress out and strain out your salary cap.
Yep.
And you bring in the complements through free agency. That is what the Giants have focused on over the last 2 years, and you hope that this rookie class that just came in, if you could get them to continue what the previous year's draft class produced, that should be good signs of what's yet to come.
Well, and you combine that with getting either Carl Anthony Towns or Joe Okafor in the draft tonight, and everything's
going to be great.
What a
beautiful transition. What? See, we don't necessarily focus on one team.
I flip back again.
I can see clearly you're focused in on the Giants roster today.
I'm very distracted.
100%. Yes.
All right, let's go. That's a joke, obviously, folks. Let's go to the calls at 201-939-4513. Already packed lines. Let's go to Abdul in Minneapolis first. Abdul, what's going on, pal? How are you?
Hey, guys. First of all, I love your show. You guys are, like, the only thing I get out here for New York sports.
Thanks,
I really
man.
Appreciate it.
Hey, appreciate you listening.
Second of all, yesterday you guys asked a question about who was the most important offensive player for next year, and one of you guys said it would be Will Beatty. And I kind of agree and disagree. I think Will Beatty is probably the most important person that can't get hurt because we have no depth behind him.
Right.
But if he plays well, I don't think he'd have the most impact on the team. I think he'll play well, and his play will just, you know. I think Eric Flowers play well, the most impact, if he plays well or bad.
Well, again, I think the way I phrased it yesterday, the most critical person that has to play well for the Giants offense to work, and that's why I pick Beatty, because to me, if Beatty plays poorly or gets hurt, I think you're in a load of trouble, and that's why I went with Beatty. I agree with you. If he plays his best football, is he going to be as impactful as a guy like Odell Beckham Jr.? No, he's probably not. But if you lose Beatty, I think you're in a heap of trouble, and that's why I decided to pick Beatty yesterday.
Right. But if he plays well, I think, you know, you may not even notice it because he's blocking, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think if Flower plays really well or badly, it affects more than one position. And it affects the running backs.
That's a fair point.
It affects the guard play, like the center play, kind of affects the whole offense. And if he plays well, it'll also rise up the whole offense. You know what I mean? So I think as an impact, I think he could possibly have the most impactful player. Also, I like Pauly D's, the wide receiver play. Reuben Randall will also have a lot of effect on the offense because, you know, it'll help Beckham have more catches and vice versa. Well, anyway, I'll let you guys go. Once again, you guys are doing a great job, and thanks.
Thanks, Abdul.
Appreciate the call.
I just worry about putting that type of pressure on Flowers. You know, I don't want to go around and say he's the most critical player to the Giants' offense, and I don't disagree with what Abdul said. I think if he plays really well, he could have a huge impact, and he would be critical. But I don't think you can go into the season and say, I need Eric Flowers to be a Pro Bowler if my offense is going to be great.
Well, you and I have had discussions about whether or not he's even going to be the week one starter and all of that. So I don't want to necessarily rehash all of that.
Please, let's
but
not
that's
that.
A reason why I wouldn't necessarily go in that direction, too, because there's uncertainty about where he may play. Will he be a starter and so forth? I'm going to go in the direction I brought this up, John. If you want to say that the offensive line is integral, and I would agree, that is a generalization you could say about every team. And I think Abdul brought up a good point that the offensive line, how it plays, John, impacts the quarterback play, impacts the running game, which has been well documented with the Giants over the last few seasons. I'm going to go in the direction of Jeff Schwartz, because Jeff Schwartz, to me, is a player that the Giants were banking on in providing stability on the interior.
That's a really good
and
point.
And he got hurt.
We never brought up Schwartz yesterday.
I think he's the most critical offensive lineman because, you know, not to downgrade Beatty, but Beatty's been here. Beatty's been in the mix. Okay, Richburg's going back to a position that he at least has comfort and experience with. But Schwartz is a player that, if they move him to right guard, if they move him to left guard, he's got that veteran experience, and it prevents you from having to look at your depth chart so early in the season, which the Giants have had to do because of the injury bug. So if he stays healthy and you get the type of production that you anticipated when you signed him in via free agency, I think that provides some additional stability for the line.
And he's a veteran that's been around, understands the game, and can help, I think, lend chemistry and bring the young guys together. I think that's a great point. And you know, we didn't bring up Schwartz the last couple of days.
I don't think you could overlook that.
I agree.
It's easy to pass over players, John, that got hurt last season because you sort of take them for granted, okay, they're coming back. I mean, for example, if somebody wanted to throw out Rashad Jennings, I would say that's a good player to bring up too because Jennings also was banged up via injury.
We did mention Jennings. And I think Schwartz, and I think I went with Beatty because, you know, left tackle is so important, especially with the right-handed quarterback, blindside, all that stuff. But you're right, pressure up the middle on Eli kills him as much as anything else. And Schwartz is a veteran. He's the only other quote-unquote older veteran on the offensive line besides Beatty. All the other three guys are either rookie, if Flowers gets the starting nod, is a rookie, second-year, or third-year player. So you're right, Schwartz.
And he has versatility too, John.
But again,
the fact that he can play multiple positions.
This is the point I just want to bring up, everybody. Don't expect the offensive lineman to come in and be a Pro Bowler right away. I'm just looking at last year's draft, all right? Was Greg Robinson a dominant player for the Rams last year? Absolutely not.
He was moved around, too. That was another
Jake Matthews, was he a dominant player for the Falcons last year? Absolutely not.
By
the way, I don't think either of those guys played left tackle. Matthews did at the end of the year once about four guys went down. But he started the year at right tackle. And then, what was the name of the Falcons left tackle that got hurt earlier in the year? He either got hurt at the end of the preseason.
Was it Holly that got hurt?
He was the center that got hurt. The left tackle is somebody that's been in the league a while. He was a veteran.
I know who you're talking about.
I don't remember the guy's name. But he got hurt early, and then they eventually moved Matthews over to the left side. Terrell Lewan was fine last year, but again, not dominant. Zach Martin was the guy that you really peck on and say, oh, he was fantastic last year. Juwan James in the first round, he wasn't a dominant player. Joe Bitonio was actually one of the better first-year offensive linemen last year. Pro Football Focus actually had him ranked just as high or a little bit higher, I think,
than
Zach
Baker,
Martin.
By the way.
Sam Baker's the guy. Exactly.
Yeah.
He went down. He was their left tackle before they moved Matthews over. Xavier Suofilo, the first pick of the second round to the Houston Texans, wasn't a dominant player by any means. And just going back to the year before that, Eric Fisher and Luke Jokel, Lane Johnson, their rookie years, I don't mean to be critical.
Hurry up and down.
They were not very good. They had a lot of issues. And that was the first overall pick in the draft, the second overall pick in the draft, and the fourth overall pick in the draft. Now, Jonathan Cooper, by the way, the seventh overall pick in the draft, and Chance Warmack, the 10th overall pick in the draft, none of those guys have become Pro Bowl caliber offensive linemen yet. 0.0. So just relax.
And
it might take a little bit of time.
Correct. They're still within that rookie window, though.
Oh, 100%.
So all hope is not lost with all
those
players.
I'm not giving up on those guys. That's my point. Sometimes it takes 2 years for these guys to become the players you think they're going to become, especially for a guy like Fisher, who came from a small school, Central Michigan, for example. But Flowers obviously comes from a big school in Miami. But it takes time for these guys. I just don't want to put that much pressure on Flowers off the bat. I think it's dangerous. 201-939-4513. Ivan in Delaware. Ivan, what's going on?
How's it going, gentlemen?
Doing well.
Doing well, Ivan.
No, it was a great topic today. You know, it's like great minds think alike. We had a similar conversation the other day on the Shakedown show, but I wanted to touch on the offensive line since you guys just mentioned it. And I've been bringing this up to other Giants fans that I know and saying that, to me, you know, it might make more sense to start Flowers at left guard and leave Pugh at right tackle, especially if Pugh starts out in camp and preseason and he's looking good at, you know, at right tackle. you know, and I think that will be a better adjustment for Flowers coming into the league, especially since he does, you know, he's more raw than you know, you would expect from the ninth pick in the draft.
You know, Ivan, I think it's interesting. You look at it one of two ways. Flowers, he's more comfortable at tackles. They leave him at a tackle. But is he going to be more uncomfortable moving from the left side to the right side, or is he going to be more uncomfortable moving into guard? Now, he played right tackle in his freshman year in Miami a little bit, so he does have some experience out there. Mm-hmm. But I think there is a fair question to be asked. For example, Jeff Schwartz last year said he had a hard time moving over to the left side from the right side. That was something he struggled with a little bit. So right. I think depending on the guy, some transitions are easier than others.
Right, and the main focus behind that to me is we've had a hard time running between the tackles. We've had a hard time creating that push up the middle. And I feel if you put a beast like Flowers, you know, opposite, you know, of Schwartz at the other guard position, and then with Richburg in his natural position at center, I just feel that, you know, we'll be able to better run between the tackles, which has been a huge problem for the Giants. I mean, the run game in general has been a problem, but I just think that starting the season off, that would give us the best chance to at least be more fluid at the beginning instead of the growing pains of Pugh maybe being at guard and then having Flowers out there on the right tackle. I just think it just gives us the ability to start out, you know, just a smoother pace next year, you know, this season coming up, especially with that first game being against the Cowboys. That's a huge game. It is only one game, but the Cowboys have beaten us up, you know, a lot lately in the last couple of years. And the tone, you know, it'd be better set if we can start out with a win versus the Cowboys, you know, to set the tone for the season. And I just feel that that would be an ideal lineup and then something that, you know, hopefully the Giants are taking a look at.
Well, Ivan, it's a divisional game, so it goes without saying that it's important. It has nothing to do necessarily if the Cowboys have had the Giants' number over the last few seasons and so forth, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. But there's a lot of divisional games early in the season, and it is important for the Giants to take care of business in the division because that is the easiest way to get the divisional crown. With respect to his alignment on the offensive line, you know, the reason why there's been some ups and downs, at least early in the season over the last 2 years, is they've suffered injuries, John, in the preseason. You know, and you can't predict that. You can't anticipate that. So, you know, we could sit here and play the game of musical chairs, as I like to call it, with different types of alignments with the O-line. As long as everyone stays healthy, that means they're going to be out there during training camp, John. They're going to be out there during the preseason. They're going to gain continuity. And that has been the missing ingredient over the last few seasons because at the worst possible time, somebody who was supposed to be a starter went down because of the injury bug.
Yeah, I had a chance to catch up with David Deal, Sean O'Hara, and Chris Snee. They were all at Sean O'Hara's golf tournament last week. I did a written story. It's going up on Giants.com. I believe Wednesday or Thursday. I'm not sure which days. Whatever they were featuring in the offense.
A written story.
I do a little bit of everything
this.
Now. So, and David Beal had a very interesting point in the story that you'll see when it comes out. And he said, John, the offensive line is not a plug-and-play position.
Yeah.
Our group was so good because we played together, not for games, for years together. You build that trust. You build that teamwork, you build the chemistry, and that's what makes an offensive line great. So like you say, getting these guys on the field, Lance, and you can do it in practice, that's great. But the way almost, you know, you talk about it, you don't grow that natural chemistry until you're out there in a game, on the field together. Preseason, sure, but the regular season, I think he's an even bigger impact. That's when you really grow chemistry with the guy next to you. So I think it's going to be a work in progress. I think they'll get better as they go along, and you hope that in preseason, in training camp, they can find a set starting five and actually have all guys in the same five spots the whole camp. Wouldn't that be nice?
Ideal.
I feel like it's been years since that's been able to be the case. And next week, I believe next Wednesday is OTA number one, we'll get the first taste of how they line these guys up, first team, second team, third team. So we'll see how quickly they try to insert Flowers into that first team. My guess is that you won't see that first week of OTAs. I think Flowers will be with the second team, and you will see the same starting five, assuming Jeff Schwartz is good to go. I'm not sure what his health situation is going to be if he can be on the field for OTAs. I'm not sure what the deal is with that. But if he's healthy, I think you're going to see Richburg at center. You'll see Schwartz and Jerry at guard. And again, this is a guess. I don't know anything. And you'll see Beattie and Pugh outside of the tackles. That would be my guess. And you'll see Flowers at right or left tackle with the second team.
I would agree. I think that makes the most sense. I think you start off with players in positions where they're familiar with. However, if Schwartz is not ready to go, does that open the door? And once again, this is the game of speculation to move maybe Pugh into a guard spot just to maybe get him comfortable.
Or do you slide Mosley in there? Remember, Mosley started guard for almost all of training camp last year until the regular season started.
That's a good point. So they have options. And you know what? It's good to have options at this point.
And again, who goes on the field and lines up in the OTAs doesn't really matter. It's a matter of where you get when you get to training camp and then to the preseason. And then, of course, you build up to the regular season. So we're just guessing what they're going to do here, folks. Tom Coughlin doesn't tell us. He doesn't tell anybody what he's going to do with those alignments. So we'll have to wait and find out in 8 days now exactly how he's going to set that up.
But as we were talking about, it doesn't hurt if you start that continuity in OTAs, John, and you lead it all the way up through training camp into the regular season, especially given the injury history with the offensive line for the Giants over the last 2 years.
All right, here we go. I got a couple of tweets I want to get to real quick, then we'll get back to your calls. Joe at JCS02008, I think this year Hankins will enter the conversation with the Sues and Darius's and be in the conversation for All-Pro. I agree. I thought he could have been in the conversation for that last year, too, based on how well he played. A lot of people are saying Burhe because they need him to step up and be that starter next to Landon Collins. So I think that's interesting. Cooper Taylor, too, could be put into that guy. Big Dash 07088. What's the deal with this Jerome Cunningham guy? I keep hearing his name. Jerome Cunningham was an undrafted free agent. They added, the third or fourth week? Third week of training camp last year? Maybe second week of training camp?
Around that time.
He was a mid-training camp pickup, if I recall. Fast guy, good athlete, very well built, and he's a guy that they like his raw skills, but they're still trying to kind of flesh him out as a tight end. Let's see, a couple other two. I think Devon Kennard has to make another big jump, but we need more to be the monster that he can be. That's at SNF Mikey. Dan Ricker. Might be right about Pugh at right tackle because he has been training like a beast this offseason at the Jay Glazer gym. That's true. Let's see. I think that's about it.
I've got one or two
here. What do you got?
I got Jay Smith at JewBlue1. Nat Burhe, he will get every opportunity to showcase his talents this year. Probably start opposite Landon Collins. We were talking about perhaps Burhe or Taylor making an impact as they make the jump from a few years in the league into perhaps a favorable starting position job. And then SNF Mikey at Mikey Angel TV. Rashad Jennings being an integral player. We have to run the ball. Couldn't do it consistently last year. Second, he would rank the offensive line as being the most important area on this team to make a jump.
I asked for an area. I asked for a player.
Well, he branched out the conversation.
That's what you call a cop out.
I wouldn't say that's cop out.
Cop out.
I call that branching out the conversation.
I call that
we start with a small premise. And
why am I not surprised you would defend this? The king of the cop out.
I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I don't see him copying out. He mentioned Jennings.
I know,
but
then he said the offensive line. Give me a specific offensive lineman.
Well, if he's listening, which I'm sure he is, if you can appease John here, he's all worked up. He's not going to be able to sleep tonight.
I set the rules. The rules will be followed.
You set the rules. Excusez-moi. Okay. I get it.
We live in a law and order society. The rules must be followed. Otherwise, there is chaos.
Well, your rules must be followed on this program.
And behind this blue desk, that's absolutely
true.
Yes,
exactly. Well, how about we continue your rules on the phone lines?
201-939-4513. Ron in Georgia. Ronald?
Hey, what's going on, Les? What's going on, John?
What's up, Ron?
Doing well, Ron.
Okay, but before John jumps on me, I got a player. But first thing I'm going to say, the most impact has got to be the offensive line.
John's not going to like that answer, Ron.
No, go ahead.
He's already going to jump
on. I will let Ron finish, and then I'll jump on him. It's fine.
Player in particular is going to be Justin Pugh. And the reason I say that is the last caller kind of referenced moving Flowers to guard. He's already got raw and footwork problems. How's it going to be with pad level against interior linemen? Keep him where he's comfortable at tackle. Go ahead and put him at right tackle and move Pugh to the inside. If you move Pugh to the inside, he's got to make the greatest jump. To me personally, being a 3-year starter already on the line in the league, he's got to get it and get it quick at left guard.
Hey, Ron, I think you make a good point. If Pugh does end up moving inside, I think the Giants will look for him to make a jump in. And I think Lance mentioned this with Ruben Randle, and I'll mention it with Pugh. I think you want to see more consistency out of Justin Pugh. You've seen too many peaks and valleys from him. I want to see him. Maybe he's not going to be a consistent All-Pro next year right away, but let's see very good and solid play week in, week out where you know what you're going to get.
And maybe the inconsistency came just because he's not good on that island over there at right tackle. He might need to be inside.
Yeah, he also battled a quad injury very quietly. He missed one game towards the end of the year, but he played with a pretty bad quad for a few games too. So I bet you that has something to do with some of his inconsistency as well.
All right. And a question I had, I'll take it off the air, about Brent Jones, about him playing backup center. With the troubles that everybody's talking about as far as the neutral zone and how close the players are in the NFL, don't you think it would be better fit for him to play guard, where he's kind of a step off the center and he's got a little bit more space than playing center where that nose guard is really directly on top?
Well, you know, Ron, that's interesting. Thanks a lot for the call. You know, you can have that little space back if you're the guard, but here's the thing. If you're snapping the football, you're always going to be lack of a better term, a snap ahead of everybody else. You're going to, you know when the snap's coming, when the other guys don't. So that gives you a second ahead of time. Number two, generally speaking, your center's not going to get matched up one-on-one with somebody a whole lot. The center comes over and helps. He does combination blocks. He'll chip guys, things like that. You don't necessarily typically have somebody right over the center and he has to block somebody one-on-one. If the nose tackle's there in the 3-4, you know what? You're going to bring the guard over, and you're going to double-team that nose tackle with the center because he weighs 340, 350 pounds. So I don't think you want to move Jones out of his comfort zone. I think his strength is his smarts, and I think at center doing the protections and stuff, that's where his strength's going to be. So I wouldn't mess around moving him around. I think you put him, leave him where he's comfortable. Now let's see if he can do it. And I sat down with Brett Jones. That's going to go up the same day as the O'Hara story that I did, an interview I did with him. So that'll be up later in the week. And he talked about some of the adjustments he has to make in terms of having the guys closer to the line, being quicker off the ball, and also dealing with the larger size of players in the NFL. And I think your average CFL defensive lineman is like 260, 270. It's a far cry from Ndamukong Suh, and the guys will be lining up against him in the NFC East.
Well, I would agree. That's why I think you worry about his transition from center in the CFL to center in the NFL, as opposed to now throwing on him learning a completely different position that he doesn't have a great deal of experience in. And he also spoke to the media during rookie minicamp about that transition. He's well aware of that, and that's a big reason why the Giants are working with him now. Better you start early, you groom him to be your backup center, so that by the time training camp comes, a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more familiar. And the Giants have a number of big defensive tackles, so he's going to get his fair share of tests during the course of practice.
201-939-4513. Christian's in New York. Christian's been holding the longest. How are you, buddy?
Good. How's it going, guys?
Doing well, Chris.
I just want to say a big storyline going into this season is what kind of role DeMontre Moore will have. But I really think that just because Spags came back, you're going to see his snaps increase just because of third and long situations. Perry Fuel is a little more hesitant to put him in just for that, but I think Spags will put him in anytime it's more than third and four.
Well, Christian, here's the key. You got to get into those third and long situations by stopping the run first. So the only way you can get DeMontre Moore onto the field is if you stop the run on first and second down.
Yeah, and I think that's why we'll see a lot of Robert Ayers and Odighizuwa on first and second down, early down type of situations.
Agree.
And also, I got to say, I haven't called since the draft, but I was really impressed with it. That later round safety that no one knew about, he really seems like he could. He really seems like he has the tools to transition to the NFL.
Mykel Thompson, you're referring to. We actually, John and I, had his positional coach from Texas on, Chris Vaughn, last week, and he was obviously talking him up, which is understandable considering they have close ties, but he did emphasize his versatility and how that's going to help him make the jump to the NFL, and also a very strong classroom guy. So your point is well taken, Christian.
Yeah, and also I really like that guard too. The tackle that's going to be a guard. I think he could actually end up making a role for himself down the line.
Well, I think that a lot has to do with opportunities with respect to, you're talking about their seventh-round pick
out of
Florida State.
So, Bobby Hart.
Yeah, that'll really call for opportunity. If the opportunity's there, I think he has an opportunity to make an impact. But, there's a lot of depth on the offensive line, at least in terms of numbers that they brought in to fight for competition. But he's a young player that also moved around at Florida State. Let's not forget about that. They envision him as a guard. He also has played tackle on both sides when he's been at Florida State. So, that's why he fits into the mold of a Giants offensive lineman. You can move him around. You can prepare him to play multiple positions.
Yeah, and also there's a lot of talk about Pugh moving to guard. But, looking at the matchup there, that sounds pretty challenging for him to block defensive tackles when some left defensive ends give him a run for his money in terms of power. So.
Well, Christian, I think with Pugh, I think he'll be fine doing the things like pulling and, you know, those types of things you ask from a guard. I think where his challenge is going to be is when that power guy gets up on top of him and he has to get low and anchor. And I think that's where his challenge is going to be. He's been working all offseason long to get stronger. I think if that move to guard does happen at some point, that's where he's going to have to shore up his game. I think the move stuff that you ask him for the guards, he'll be fine at.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'd like to see that. It's just, but I also think he'll be a really good player. I'm not trying to bash him at all.
Yeah.
I just think that he might be better at right tackle than at left guard.
Well, we'll find out.
A lot of time remains to be
Thanks,
seen
Christian.
As to what they're going to do, Christian. Appreciate the phone call. And it wouldn't surprise me if he is still at right tackle. You know, we're all assuming that, you know, they're going to find the spot for Ereck Flowers, but we don't know. A lot is going to depend on how these guys come together at OTAs, in training camp, and let them fight with each other to bring out the best five on the offensive line. That's the goal, and that's priority number one.
Not to be the human plug machine here, but he mentioned Bobby Hart. I did talk to Bobby Hart. That got posted up at the end of last week on Giants.com back on May 15th. If you want to check that out. And Michael Thompson, that will be up later on in the week as well. I talked to him. So,
have you spoken to all 90 players? Why don't you just
you know
that
what? It feels like I have.
So that's Nile's why, I mean, there's no point to even highlighting players at this
Nile
point.
Nile is putting me to work.
It's about time you're in the paycheck. There you go. That's what they should be doing.
And yesterday, Dickie Zoo's interview went up. So you can check that out, too.
He's named at least five or six guys. And the show is very young, my friend.
Somebody
so
around here has to earn a paycheck. And not just, you know, ride on other people's coattails.
Yes, well, you know, some people have a talent at doing that.
Yeah, you do.
That's why I'm not disagreeing
well,
with that.
Well, and you're also very light. So when you light, so when you
See,
lay on,
there you go.
So when you
it's
hold on to the shoulders and you grab
on the coattails.
I can go a pretty long distance
Correct.
While you're hanging
exactly.
on to the coattails.
But you didn't take into consideration that it's now the warmer weather and not many people are wearing coats at this point. So you may need to come up with some better
grab the
terminology.
Collar.
Okay, that works a little bit better.
Maybe you can fasten some type of harness apparatus. You know, the people wear like the babies on their back.
Oh, wow, wonderful. How convenient for someone like me.
We can hook up like the Lance Meadow like backpack.
Is there room for snacks too there?
Well, of course, you'd be able to bring some
snacks. I just want
sure.
to make sure. Gotcha.
What do you like? So animal crackers, maybe?
Animal crackers will work. A little apple
like
juice.
Animal, okay.
The juice box, too.
How about apple sauce? You like
apple
that, too?
Apple sauce? I'm not a big apple
okay,
sauce
so
guy.
Okay, so
animal
an
crackers
apple...
in a juice box. I think I'd be sick. That would get me through the day.
Now, what juice box do you like? What flavor? I was a big fan
I like all
of,
types.
I like
I'm
the,
picky.
Growing up, Mott's. The applesauce we all made
yes.
juice boxes.
Correct.
They had
okay.
an apple grape flavor, which I love.
So you like the combination?
I did like, well, yes. I like apple generally, but the apple grape was like a treat whenever they had it. It was hard to find sometimes.
You had to dig through the
fan.
Shelves in
yeah,
the
you
supermarket.
Did. Absolutely.
It was tough, yeah. How about Apple and Eve? Were you a fan of Apple and Eve, or that was second to Mott's?
Is that a brand?
Yes, that's a brand.
I'm not that familiar with
not that.
Not that
familiar.
No.
Okay. You have to expand your knowledge of juice box. Apparently, you know,
well,
you only were given Mott's when you were a child.
I'm not the one still buying juice boxes today.
Well,
so
I would agree.
Okay.
I still am buying juice boxes, so therefore I'm guilty.
Let's go to Kashawn in Maryland. She's up next. Kashawn, what's going on?
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Hi, Kashawn.
Well, Kashawn. How's everything?
Good, good. Just wanted to say I really enjoy you guys' show. You guys don't know how much you guys mean to people like me who live out of the tri-state area who never get Giants news. And
thank you,
I really
Kashawn.
Appreciate just what you guys do. Thank you so much.
You are very, very welcome. We're happy to do it.
Appreciate that.
All right. Now that I got that out the way, to answer your question, I think I'm going to go on a limb. I think the most important person on offense and probably defense, too, for the Giants' success is the strength and conditioning coach.
Oh.
I've been doing some research of my own. And let me see if you
Always
guys know. What is the job description of the strength and conditioning coach?
The strength and conditioning coach's primary responsibility, the Giants have two of them. You have Jerry Palmieri and then you have Marcus Paul, who are the two guys that run the Giants strength and conditioning program. It is to get the players physically mm-hmm. set to be the best they can on the field, and there's also a certain extent where part of the strength and conditioning program is to help keep the guys healthy over the course of the year.
Mm-hmm. Which is one of the reasons why both of those gentlemen should have been fired.
Kashawn.
For the Giants to have led the league in the past few years with injuries, the amount of injuries that we've had for even soft tissue like quads and hammies and things of that nature, I don't think these two young men are doing their job
now, last
effectively
year,
and efficiently.
Now, Kashawn, hold on one second. Last year, now, In terms of last year and the soft tissue injuries, the Giants did change their program a lot last year.
They
started using the GPS system where they track player movements, and soft tissue injuries last year went significantly down statistically. The Giants tracked this information, and the changes they made in their strength and conditioning program last year actually severely decreased the number of soft tissue injuries. Now, what happened? You had Prince tear his bicep. You had, you know, Jeff Schwartz break his ankle and break his foot. John Beeson's toe/foot, you know, exploded on him. So you had fractures and broken bones. You know, Odell Beckham with the knee. That's not a soft tissue thing. That's a knee injury. You know, things like that, strength and conditioning, I don't think really has an impact on. So last year, in my opinion, I think they got better with the soft tissue stuff. And that had been a problem, especially hamstrings, you know, 3-4 years ago. We saw them. I think the changes they made last year did help a lot in that regard. And you hope that some of the bad luck this year goes away with broken bones, you know, ligaments and tendons and things like that.
Right, because that's the key, John, because if we look at this roster and in conjunction with the schedule, there's no question in my mind that the Giants can compete for the division and a playoff spot, and that's all contingent upon the health of our team. And so I look at, well, who's responsible for delivering, you know, that is a success. And, again, I'm glad that the soft tissue injuries have declined, but and also – some of these dietary and these, you know, this is a multi-billion-dollar corporation. They need to eat, like, you know, steak caviar or whatever the case may be so that they're stronger. Because that's a problem, too, I guess, when you want to, you know, analyze the more severe injuries with the ACLs and the bones and things like that. So I just think that the strength and conditioning coaches need to put on notice. I mean, I'm glad they decreased the soft tissue, but that also they need to try to get better at that because, you know, I think the Giants on paper have a very good team. It's all about now chemistry and cohesiveness on the offensive line. And if the guys that we have can stay healthy, this can be a pretty good football team. And and everything is prefaced, even with you and Lance and all the callers, everybody keeps saying injury, injury, if injury, if injury, if injury. And I think that's the strength and conditioning. So they need to be our MVPs of the team, so to speak. So that's all I have for today.
Thank you, Sean.
A lot of people are doubting us. I think the Giants are going to have a pretty good season. I think this is a 10-win football team. I know you guys were not on that yet, but I want you to write my prediction down, too, later on during training camp. Okay. I think this is a 10-win team. And thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Sean. I will not write down your prediction yet. I will give you a chance to change it before we get to the start of the season. Charlie went in early. He's at 8-8. And we have Joey in Virginia had the Eli 40 touchdown, 9 interception prediction, which was bold.
Wow.
That was bold.
That was bold.
And
then
my
chicken scratch is up there, too.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I see you're writing on my notes.
Yes, I knew. Well, I'm surprised you haven't caught up to it until now.
I didn't notice it until now. And then Rudy, 11-5, postseason run and Super Bowl?
Correct. That's what he mentioned.
Win or just make it?
You know, I can't really remember.
See,
but we'll give him credit for maybe.
This is
saying,
why you shouldn't be adding notes.
You don't
need
Super
to get them right.
Hold on
a minute.
Well,
you don't know what the prediction is.
A Giants fan picking the team to get to the Super Bowl and losing. Come on. I mean, let's put common sense together.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Back to what Kashawn said. A couple things. The Giants actually did, besides the GPS stuff we talked about, they also made changes to the type of food they served last year in the cafeteria. So they did make some change to that as well, and they have yoga people in here all the time. Doing strength and stretching and flexibility. That's the word I was looking for to improve that with the yoga to also try to prevent injuries. So they're doing their best here, folks. But I can't logically come up and say, you know what, if they just lifted weights a little bit differently, John Beeson's left toe wouldn't have fractured. You know, if they lifted weights better, you know, Jeff Schwartz wouldn't have gotten rolled on and his ankle wouldn't have broken. It's just, what are you going to do?
Well, I think another important part of what Kashawn was talking about, aside from preparing players and making sure they don't get hurt, is also making sure that you have depth. I mean, that's another key component. Every team in the NFL deals with injuries. You're going to lose a player.
Correct.
You have to accept that. You have to deal with that. Every team. So, you know, I mean, there's going to be injuries this year. You hope that they're not major injuries, but guys get banged up every year. It's the most physical sport. So you now need to make sure that you have players that are ready to step in and the level of productivity doesn't fall off. And a number of teams that I could point to that made the playoffs last year, dealt with major injuries. I mean, the Seahawks lost a lot of players during the course of the season. They managed to digest that, get to the Super Bowl. The Patriots lost a number of players, and they also managed to overcome that. So that's what separates certain teams. You deal with the injuries, but then you have the other players to step up. And the Giants, didn't remember last season, didn't just lose starters. We've emphasized this time and time again. They also lost the backups to the starters, and you're now relying on players that
were
not
here.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's what made last season, to me, extremely unusual and extremely rare. It wasn't just that you lost key integral components to your starting lineup. You also lost key backups who were supposed to then fill in for those guys.
I think you hit it, though, and this is something that Tom Coughlin and Jerry Reese spoke about in the offseason, and John Mara, too, to a certain extent, where they talked about overcoming injuries, where you're going to have injuries. Every team has them. Now, the Giants had more injuries than everybody else last year, especially the great players, some of their best players, Prince of Bukamara, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's bad luck stuff, and you got to get that under control, and you hope that the football gods, you know, treat you a little bit nicer this year. But you look at the Philadelphia Eagles last year. Their entire offensive line was hurt the first half of the year. And the funny thing is they played better the first half of the year when their whole offensive line was hurt, and then they fell apart, obviously, when they had quarterback issues. That's going to happen. But they overcame those injuries on the offensive line the first 8-9 games last year. The Dallas Cowboys, they lost Sean Lee. They lost Morris Claiborne on defense, which are two huge losses for them. They found Rolando McClain. They managed to figure things out.
And Skandrick had a very good season, too, for them.
Absolutely right. And and then you look at the Redskins. They had all sorts of injuries on the defensive line. They had trouble overcoming those injuries, especially early on in the year. Arakpo got hurt. Cofield was out from time to time. Hatcher was in and out of the lineup. Stephen Bowen was hurt.
D'Angelo Hall
went out for the year. Another excellent point. So they had injuries. Brandon Merriweather's always in and
He's
out of the lineup.
Hurt, yeah.
So they had a million injuries they had to overcome. Everyone's going to get hurt here, guys. I know a lot of times you only focus on your own team, so a lot of times sometimes you don't see what's happening elsewhere. But it's not just the Giants that deal with a lot of injuries. And we have the same conversation when people talk about holes on the team. Every team has issues they have to deal with. No team sitting here on May 19th is perfect. Everybody has problems they have to deal with.
And that's why you use this time to groom not just your starters, John. I get back to this is why it's so important to find the undrafted free agents.
Yeah.
To work with the players who we're talking about as the theme of this show, those second, third, and fourth year players who now have an opportunity to elevate their game, because this is where you strengthen the core of your team. So that when, God forbid, you do lose a starter, this is the experience they could fall back on.
And that's why when you're in the draft lottery like you are in tonight, you have to make sure you get a top two
the
pick.
The transitions, it's unbelievable.
Oh, wait, sorry, I screwed up.
Well, you were
again.
Really working on it. By the way, I also wanted to note, you brought up the fact that the Giants changed the types of foods that they're giving the players. Clearly,
yes. And the staff, by the way.
Yes, your recommendation that we have cake for breakfast, lunch,
Wait,
and dinner
hold on.
Apparently was shot down.
I'm not the one that complains about not having the red velvet every single day you're here.
That's true. That. Yeah. But that wasn't even a daily thing. That was
it was a special Friday thing.
There we go.
That was an entree roll just
at least need to consider
right
that. There. But you actually recommended it should be out there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And they thought, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily going to help the players stay fit. Potato chips, I believe you also threw out that should be the side dish instead of perhaps some greens and vegetables.
A wide array of Hostess and Drinks
yes,
products,
absolutely.
Coffee cakes, maybe a Twinkie or a Devil Dog, something like that. I'm fine with all
well,
that.
Well, there's a reason why there is a platter of chocolate chip cookies out every day to appease this man right here.
Actually, the chocolate chip cookies are to appease somebody that's a lot more important in this organization than me. That might have something to do with ownership. I'm not going to give any names out there.
But you're
but
not
there
complaining
are some very
about
important
it,
people in this building that love the chocolate chip cookies that are much more important than
well,
me.
Well, they are good.
You know who scarfs them? Tino. He gets like 4 or 5 of those every day when he's here. He has a whole handful of them. He tries to hide them and eat them during the show.
Correct. Well, I was going to say that. Tino doesn't even wait for lunch when it's appropriate. Tino comes in, and, you know, 10:30 in the morning. Let's go.
He's got the
you know,
cookies.
Breakfast of champions.
That's
absolutely
true.
Give him a bowl of milk, throw in the cookies. And he said, why do you think he's so crazy every time we see him? There you go.
201-939-4513. And by the way, there are a lot of people in this building like the cookies. I think the
cookies. I'm not downgrading the cookies.
I think the cookies disappeared for one day when they went to the healthy stuff. They were back the following day.
There was so
I think
many
it was
complaints.
Literally one day there without the chocolate chip cookies, and that's it. Let's go back to the phones, and we got two more calls before we say goodbye. Derek in Atlanta is up next. Derek?
Yeah, Peter looks like a granola guy to me. He doesn't look like a cookie guy to me.
You know what? No, you know what? You'd be surprised. The Tino, his metabolism, I think, is so naturally high that he can scarf cookies and survive. Seriously.
I mean, that doesn't seem like the fit with those power walks, you know, it seems like, you know.
No, he's walking around and he's popping cookies in his
yeah,
nose.
Exactly.
He's fine.
Listen, it gives him energy. How do you think he can withstand so many power walks? He needs to build up the energy. He's like, you know, the animals that they store the cookies, you know, in the cheeks.
The squirrels.
The squirrels.
The
yeah, there you go. Okay. Yeah, so that's a decent comparison.
Close enough.
Yes, close. In that ballpark. Yeah, anyway, Derek, let's get back
about,
to the topic.
Listening to Kashawn's call, I mean, we have grass, and you would think that we would have less injuries than teams with, you know, that plastic out there.
And I'll tell you what, Derek, the team does practice on grass every day the weather is good outside. Every single day the team's out there on the grass field.
And I remember Green Bay Packers. And when the year they won the Super Bowl, didn't they have something like 22 people in IR that year?
Yep. Absolutely
it was
right.
It's some kind of crazy. But you just have to, you do have to build a team and not just starters. You know, I was going to ask, I remember Eric Hermans coming out of college, and I remember seeing him pancake a lot of people. I was just like, what is his progress? Does he look like he's got any kind of shot of getting off the practice squad and contributing a little bit, you know?
Now, you
maybe
know, Derek,
a regular backup?
That is an excellent question. It's hard for me to give you a good comment on Eric Hermans only because in practice, it's not full contact. So, you know, even if Eric Hermans could pancake somebody in practice, guess what? He's not going to because you don't want to get your defensive players hurt. So it's hard for me to really give you a good nugget on Hermans and the type of progress he's made. The coaches would have a much better feel for that than anything I could tell you. I don't think his strength's ever an issue. I could tell you he's here as much as anybody else last offseason and this offseason working, lifting weights. When the other players don't have to be here, he is. So I could tell you he's working really hard and doing everything he can to contribute. And we'll see in the OTAs and in training camp this year whether or not he can take that next step and maybe contribute, if not as a starter, then as a backup.
Yeah, hopefully he can be a permanent backup, you know, as one of the guys. We do need an upgrade of our backups also. I was going to ask you, out of the draft class from last year, besides Odell Beckham, who do you think will be the breakout player this year?
Well, what do you mean by breakout? Are you talking about potentially being a
everybody
starter?
Everybody contributed, I think, even Matt Burhey on special
correct.
Teams.
Correct. Well, that's what I'm saying. Just about everybody made somewhat of an impact last year, so that's why I was looking for what you meant by breakout. Are we talking about becoming
maybe
a starter?
Maybe break into the starting lineup as an everyday regular person, maybe, you know, play, you know, just a pleasant surprise. You know,
well, I would throw out Nat Burhey to answer your question, Derek, especially if you're going to throw in surprise. See, Kennard wouldn't surprise me because I saw enough out of him last year that even if he has an expanded role, which we're assuming, you would assume that he's still going to be productive. Burhey, he could jump into a starting role and be productive, which would certainly be a nice boost for the Giants secondary. So I think he fits the criteria that you're talking about.
Yeah. I think Weston Wisberg has the opportunity to play all 16 games, but I don't think, you know, center's really not noticed that often. If they're doing their job and everything, everybody just goes along and really don't talk about them. I would like to see Jay Bromley get some snaps alongside of Hankins. Like, I mean, Hankins, that first year, wasn't, you know, he did okay job, but, you know, he really didn't shine. But coming on that second year, we're starting to see how good he is. And I'm hoping we get the same thing out of Jay Bromley.
Well, Derek, part of that was playing time. Remember, Hankins played a lot last year. He didn't play until the latter stages of his rookie campaign, at least consistently.
Yeah.
And that's why you saw him as a two-way player. He stopped the run last year. And let's not forget, he got to the quarterback, which was a huge boost to that defensive line.
And that's exactly what Bromley did. Bromley didn't get as many snaps as his rookie year, but hopefully he can get more snaps this year and stay on the field.
Yeah. No question. Finish up, Derek.
I missed the question of the day, but I just wanted to say I think BRC just needs to stay healthy. I mean, he's getting paid a lot of money, and we need to shut down corner. And, you know, if he can shut down that side for 16 games, that'll go a long way for us doing, you know, some work in this division.
Thanks, Derek. It's funny. I figured Derek did hear our question of the day because he brought up Jay Bromley. It's the perfect answer. Which second, third, or fourth-year player would have the biggest jump from last year to this year? And he thinks it's Bromley.
based on playing time, because he thinks he's going to have more of an expanded role.
Which I think there's a good chance. Again, if he earns that expanded role, and he's going to have to earn it now in the OTAs and in preseason and in training camp, but we'll see if he does. A couple other tweets here, Lance, real quick. David Goodman, guys get hurt. It's the top players getting hurt, killing the Giants. No team could overcome that. I mean, you look at some of the top players that got hurt, and look, David has a point, and I tried to make that before. If I didn't make it well enough, that's my fault. Beeson a starter, Prince a starter, Jeff Schwartz a starter, Rashad Jennings a starter, Victor Cruz a starter. I think those are the main five starters that got hurt last year.
Well, do you consider Walter Thurman the starting slot corner?
No question. I would throw him in there. That's six. Great point.
And then Robert Ayers played enough. He wasn't necessarily a starter, but he was impactful enough in the stat.
He got injured week 10?
In that ballpark.
Something like that?
Yeah.
All right, that's fair. I can't argue with that. That's a lot of guys. It's a lot of guys. And Colin Jenkins played hurt the whole year, too.
Did you mention Victor Cruz, right?
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
Just want to make sure I know we named
Cruz
so many because that was another important player that they lost out on.
Absolutely right. And it is hard once you have those guys come in. How about this tweet I find funny? At Big Blue Beckham, 16 minutes ago. Some days on BBKL, it's like the perfect bromance between Schmelk and Meadow. And then it's like they want to kill each other.
I don't know about that, but if that's how you want to classify it.
Any conflict between Lance and I is in fun.
Yes.
We actually do get along, believe it or not. We're actually friends from college, believe it or not. So we don't like each other from time to time, and that's fine. He's
Which
annoying.
Well documented on this show.
I think you understand where I'm coming from. He can become very irritating.
Absolutely.
I mean, he doesn't work real hard. He doesn't try. He kind of shows up and mails in it every day. You know, he bickers with people whenever he walks in here.
It's one of my strengths, actually. It's one of my attractive characteristics, bickering. Yeah, I have honed that craft on a daily routine.
Whining, I believe, is like the top two or three things on your resume, right?
It complements the bickering. Would you argue that?
Well, you don't want to be arguing. You can be whining part of the time, too. I get that.
No, I just want to be a little bit well-rounded in the bickering department. So I would argue that would be a nice way to round out the resume.
And look at this transition that I just set up.
Oh, you've been all over the place with the transition.
Do you know who likes to complain and bicker a whole lot?
Oh, I know who we're getting
Charlie
on
in Portland, Maine. Charlie, how are you, Chuckles?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing well, Chuck.
Doing
how are
phenomenal
you?
Now.
Hey, you don't mind making this a three-way, do you?
Oh, boy. I don't know about that. That was not a transition that I liked too much.
That is not a big blue kickoff approved, Charlie.
Yes.
Hey, guys. Hey, Lance, I hope in your snack box you like cheese. Because we got a lot of – I hope you like Swiss cheese because we got a lot of holes, man.
Here we
got
go.
A lot
the
of
transitions
holes.
Continue.
Brandon Spikes just got signed by the Packers, so there goes a nice backup to Beeson, which we still don't have.
Charlie, you have two backups to Beeson. I've been telling you this for a month. You got JT Thomas. You got Jameel McClain.
Oh,
and you got Devon Kennard. How many more guys do you want?
You know it. He can't stop the run. He had one good game against us, for God's sake. But anyway.
What about Devon Kennard? Hold on. You poke holes in every other linebacker. What about Kennard?
Okay. Speaking about Kennard and Beckham, you were talking about we cut down on our soft tissues injuries.
Yeah.
Who had hamstring injuries last year?
Beckham showed up his second day Charlie.
Beckham was here for two during the season.
Charlie, Beckham was here for 2 days before he hurt his hamstring. You think that has anything to do with the Giants strength and conditioning staff? That's the condition he was in before he showed up here.
No, that didn't. But when Coughlin tried to get him back on the field too early, then we lost him for the whole friggin' season. You know, the whole friggin' preseason anyway.
Well, Charlie, before you continue, let's put things in perspective. Okay,
right.
You noted two players who had hamstring issues. What about everybody else who John and I listed that were not soft tissue injuries? You know, you're focusing on two players on a 53-man roster. How about everybody else who suffered ligament tears, pectoral muscle tears, and everybody else?
Yeah, Lance, look. I'm telling you, that's why I said it's Swiss cheese. I mean, we have an offensive, and I'll tell you one thing: if they don't start in OTAs right away, making Flowers the right tackle and moving Pugh to guard, they got to do that right away if they want to make that transition. Because if Flowers doesn't start at right tackle from day one, then he's a bust, in my opinion, for the first year. I'm not saying he's not going to be a good player down the road,
okay. But
for the first year, he will be a bust
because we need
a right tackle. And we should have got him in free agency, not in the draft, but that's another whole story. But so they better start it right away, because if they wait, they're going to have problems, because you got to get a line that's going to be playing together. And so if you're going to move Pugh, you got to move him day one. You can't wait until, like, second preseason game to decide to put him in the guard position. So I think that's one. And just from your question yesterday, who would be a player that needs to, if they went down, we'd be in big trouble? I say it's Odell Beckham because he's our number one receiver. And without him, we don't have a number one. Randall isn't a number one. Harris is not a number one. Cruz is injured, so he's not going to be a number one. We would be in deep trouble if Beckham goes down.
No, Charlie, you know what? I agree with that. The reason I didn't put Beckham on my list because I almost assume I know how good he is, how good he's going to be. But, yeah, if the question was what player could the Giants least afford to lose to injury, Eli would obviously be the first guy on the list, and Beckham would probably be the second one. I don't disagree with that. I think that's more than fair.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I just see there's so many holes on this team. I just can't believe that we're not addressing some of these holes in free agency. There's still players out there that we should be getting or at least bringing in. And
Charles, here's the thing, though.
We don't have injuries.
Charles, here's the difference. They address the holes. You just don't like how they address the holes.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you why. the draft was very heavy in running backs and very heavy in wide receivers.
They have
plenty
of running backs, Charlie.
And plenty of wide receivers.
Listen, let me say what I want to say here.
All right, go ahead.
Okay? But Jerry Reese, instead of getting the running back and the wide receiver in the draft where they were heavily loaded with talent, he gets the running back and wide receiver in the draft, in the free agency, I mean. What he needed to do is get the right tackle in free agency and a safety in free agency and got the running backs and the wide receiver in the draft.
So I hate to
tell
you. That
would have made more sense.
Even if you take the combined expenditures that you look at Harris and Vereen, you probably still have enough to sign one of the top right tackles in free agency.
Sure, Barkdale is still out there, for God's sakes. He isn't asking for a ton of money.
Well, I said top.
He rated very, very high for right tackle.
Charlie, using your point, though, now you have two safeties who are going to be under rookie contracts for at least the next 4 years and could solidify that position for the immediate future. And you have a tackle who may play on the right side, who you just drafted, who's also on a rookie contract. So in terms of salary cap savings,
Just like John said, they're going to have you have a rookie right tackle. He's going to have a lot of bumps in the road.
Yeah, Charlie.
And he's not going to play perfectly. And we need an offensive line that's going to be able to run block and protect Eli.
Now, Charlie, I understand what you're saying, and I don't remember. I'm asking you this question legitimately. I don't remember what you said last year. Did you want to sign Michael Orr last year?
Michael who?
Michael Orr.
Michael
Orr, the tackle for the Ravens, the guy who was in blindside. Did you want the Giants to sign him last offseason?
No, I didn't.
Okay, but let me put it this way. He's one of those veteran free agent type of guys that a team brought in last year, and he was a mess. They let him go. Tennessee's not on Tennessee anymore.
He's with Carolina
and he got
now.
Picked up by some, it was Carolina that
Panthers.
Picked him up. So veterans don't always work out either in free agency. You know what I mean? There are no guarantees.
Oh, no. I know. But you have a better idea of how a veteran plays and how they're going to play in your system than you do a guy coming out of college because you really don't know what they're going to do. You know, like in 2 or 3 years, I mean, Flowers might be a Pro Bowler. You know. But I know one thing. Pugh is not a Pro Bowler, and he'll never be a Pro Bowler.
Oh, we don't know that.
He was a 19th pick in the draft. He might be a good guard or might be a good tackle, but to me that was a reach, and I hope we didn't reach for Flowers because he should start right away. He should start right away.
Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, guys.
Appreciate
it. All right,
Charlie. All right, here we go. Final minute of the show. I know you're still smarting, and you're still irritated, you're still annoyed that the Bulls are out of the playoffs. They had a golden opportunity by the Cavs. I feel your pain. I remember 15 years ago when the Knicks used to lose in the playoffs.
Notice how you got to go way back for
that. It's been a while.
Yeah.
It stinks. I get it. But I want you to change your focus here for a second. The NBA draft lottery is tonight. The Knicks have the second best chance of landing a top pick.
19.9%. Well, you've been doing all the
mathematical equations
for the last 3 years.
Out of 1,000. So that's they put 1,000 ping pong balls in the little device, and 199 of them are Knick balls for the first pick in the draft. Okay. Where do you think, gut feeling, the Knicks will pick in this year's draft after the lottery tonight?
I think they get the third or the fourth pick.
I happen to agree with you. I would be thrilled off the walls with one. I'd be not off the walls, but I'd be thrilled with two. I'd be super excited about one or two. And if you land at three and the Sixers are at two, people think they're going to take the guard. So I think you can still get Okafor at three.
Okay.
So if they're at three, I'm happy. If they're at four, I'll take it. You know, like, all right, I'll deal with it. That, by the way, is the most likely scenario. There's a 32% chance, I believe, they fall into that fourth spot. Fifth is where I'm going to get upset. I want no part of the fifth pick in this year's draft. And there's about an 11.9 or 12.3 or 12.2 or something like that percent chance they pick fifth. If they pick fifth.
Well, you know, based on the lottery, the worst teams don't necessarily end up with the best selections. It's happened year in and year out.
And the fifth is the lowest the Knicks could go. Three teams behind them would have to jump ahead of the Knicks to back them down to fifth. And that's the lowest.
Well, Minnesota's got a very good chance because they had the worst record. So you wouldn't necessarily be surprised if that happens.
Well, the lowest the Timberwolves could go is four.
Correct. But so you're not going to get worked up if they're ahead of the Knicks. You understand that. Now, Philadelphia, which has basically been trying to stockpile draft picks over the last few years. And keep this in mind, not to ruffle your feathers further, but I certainly enjoy that. If Philadelphia, let's say, does get the second pick and you don't think they're going to take a big guy, remember, they could maybe pull off a trade, a team that does want a big guy.
Yeah, with the Knicks.
Always conveniently going back to something in your side. Yes, the Knicks could very well pull off a trade.
The Lakers worry me. I could see
Lakers,
them jumping
that,
up.
That would be another team.
Because it's the Lakers and that's what they do.
Yeah.
The Lakers worry me a lot. And, I'm concerned about them moving up.
Well,
the
like
Kings,
said,
I could see them trying to get the, you know, some of the play with DeMarcus Cousins over there. That worries me a little bit. I don't like that combination. Just don't put me in the fifth spot. I'll take any of the top four guys. Don't put the Knicks in the fifth spot, please.
Well, who knows? You know, maybe somebody at five will be a big impactful player.
And look, and that's happened. Dwayne Wade was the fifth pick in that draft when they in the LeBron, I think, 03. That
was the other guy that got picked. And everybody else, Darko.
So you can get a great player at five. I just think there once you get past the top four, there's a lot of risk involved with a lot of these guys.
It's
I worry
an exact
about
science,
I think
the
big,
draft.
Well,
I mean, I think you can relate that to the NFL, too.
Absolutely. And it's funny, my buddy Ian, who I share my Knicks season tickets with, brought this up to me the other day. And he said, you look at all the drafts, the top five picks, two guys are usually really good, one a star. You know, two guys are okay. You know, they're good starters. One maybe is a role player off the bench. And then the fifth guy's terrible. So
that's why you don't want the fifth pick.
No.
That's
but,
the
no,
size.
But the fifth guy's not always the actual fifth pick in the draft. You know, there could be the second pick in the draft that's terrible and the fourth or fifth pick that are really good. It varies from year to year. So, but like you said, even if it's a top four, top five pick, there's still no guarantees. You got to pick the right guy. And that's the trick.
Well, and they're in need of an impactful player. They need to strike gold with this draft.
That's the one good thing. They're so bad, though. They have needs everywhere.
Correct. Well, that's why I'm saying if you get to the fifth overall pick and all of your top players are off the board, you're still going to get, you assume, somebody at a position that could come in day one and make some type of an impact.
But I think the way this draft is structured, you get a lot more risky at five than you are at four, in my opinion. And the upside goes down a little bit. I think the ceilings of the top four guys are significantly higher than the ceilings of the guys after
that.
Are
you including Emmanuel Mudiay in your top four?
He is my fourth guy. Russell is my third guy. Mudiay is my fourth guy.
Well, but I would argue that I think there's risk connected to Mudiay.
But I think he is a very high, very high ceiling.
I do think he has a high ceiling, but I still think there's risk considering he didn't play college ball.
And that's why I picked D'Angelo Russell ahead of him. I believe there is a lot of risk to Mudiay. I agree with that 100%, which is why I'd be okay with four, but I'd be much happier with three. All right. There we go.
Well, that's
so we're on the same page.
Your layout of the land.
You guys will know by my facial expression tomorrow at noon how the Knicks did. I will either be a happy camper and be thrilled. Are you with me tomorrow or is Tino with me tomorrow?
I am in tomorrow.
Oh, boy. Yes. So I get to get your reaction to this. Oh, that's going to be fun.
Beautiful.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow at Jays.com. Lance Meadow, John Schmuck. Everybody have a great one.